This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This episode is brought to you by the Great American Magic Company, purveyors of fine magic. We appreciate Eric Citron for being a sponsor of this podcast, and we also thank you, the listeners, for going and checking it out. What? You haven't yet? Well, you need to go do that. Go to thegreatamericanmagiccompany.com, thegreatamericanmagiccompany.com, and there you can find all kinds of great deals, anything that you need that you want to perform or you want to see some videos, you want to check out some stuff, and they've got all kinds of great deals. Plus, they also will, with each purchase, you're going to be crediting some points. So this way that you can earn points to get more free stuff on down the line. Just rather than me telling you about it, go to thegreatamericanmagiccompany.com and check it out. Well, our podcast here today is something that's a little bit different. This is something that is not one of my friends that I've known for a long time. It was someone who had contacted me, and I do get these contacts and opportunities from time to time and suggestions for people who I should chat with for the podcast. But this one particularly appealed to me, and I thought it would be a worthwhile person to talk with, and also I believed in their campaign. Specifically, this is with Jim Davey, who is a filmmaker and works out in Hollywood, and in fact, I believe he's a cameraman for The Bachelor Show or The Bachelorette or one of those reality shows, and he also has an interest in magic and also is wanting to make a documentary on called The Expert on The Expert at the Card Table, specifically trying to solve the mystery of the author, who was S.W. Erdenase. Very fascinating topic and a mystery that has been discussed for a long time, and he's got an interesting trailer that he'd already put together for this, and if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, you can check it out. You can take a look at that trailer, or if you go to their campaign on Indiegogo.com, then that's Indiegogo.com, and just do a search for The Expert. You can find it, and you can learn more information there. He will talk about all of that here on this podcast, and it's one of those things that, well, do you wonder if when it's all said and done and finished, will we really know anything any different? Will we have actually solved that? Well, maybe or maybe not. And also, maybe if not, then maybe at least there will be someone in the public who thinks, well, hey, you know, I've got an uncle that I think was involved with this somewhere or another, and we got some correspondence someplace. And so there might be something that actually is resurrected that's out there in the general public and outside the magic world that someone might know of. And who knows? Anyhow, you can be a part of this campaign and help make this documentary a reality. And all that information will be discussed here on the podcast. I also encourage you, if you would please, just wait until the very end also, because we have an update. This was originally recorded sometime earlier this year in anticipation of this crowdfunding campaign to get started, but it was delayed as he was trying to get all these different perks together. And once he did, it came out here towards the end of August of 2017. It's going to run for about 30 days. So you have an opportunity to go out there then right now and check it out. But we did an update then just this within the last week where we talked for a little bit to find out what kind of perks have been added, and more about the campaign, just kind of an update from what he was expecting to do some months ago versus what actually has happened and what's up there then right now. I'll also apologize a little bit up front here, because whenever I'd recorded that conversation for those few minutes at the end, I didn't have the right microphone switched on my side. So you can still hear me. It's just fine. It's just not as good a quality of what that I would prefer and what you have hopefully come to expect here. So we get to hear from Jim Davey talking about his campaign, his interest in magic, and how this all came about, and maybe some of the people who were involved with not only the filmmaking to date, but also those that he wants to talk to, and also some of the candidates who might have been S.W. Erdenase. Who knows? And if you have some information, perhaps you can contact Jim Davey with your story, and who knows? That might make it onto the film then as well. So I think this is going to be interesting from an historical standpoint, and also I do want to help him make this documentary a reality. And so please listen, and then please join the discussion over there on the Indiegogo.com website, and where you can also help and contribute as well. So if you please, please join me in welcoming our guest here today, Mr. Jim Davey, here on The Magic Word. This is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com, and I have with me as my guest today Mr. Jim Davey out of California. Hey there, Jim. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks very much for asking. And the reason I want to talk with you today is that you are a filmmaker. And I spoke with Marcy Hume just a few weeks ago, who had released her documentary along with her other co-producer, which was Magicians. And I understand that you've got a new one that's going to be coming out sometime soon. And that's called Expert or At the Card Table. What is this? What's the title of the new documentary?
Yeah, we're tentatively calling it The Expert. I'm going to be taking a look at the book, The Expert at the Card Table by S.W. Erdnase.
Right. Well, that sounds fascinating. You know, that's always been a subject of conversation for a long time, obviously, of magicians for a few generations now, of course, since the since Di Vernon had made it so popular way back when. But even so, just trying to find out who the person Erdnase was himself. And so I'm sure that there are a lot of things that we can get into in the movie. But before we get to that, what is your background, actually? So those people who are listening to this, aside from being a filmmaker, a documentarian, I guess, that what's your interest in magic, or is this just another project?
No, I've been interested in magic since I was a kid. Off and on, I've been definitely at the amateur level. And a couple of years back, I was actually looking into doing some effects on set during downtime when we're just kind of hanging out.
Sure.
And that was the first time I'd actually come across the book. I'd never heard of the book before. Came across it in online searches, some of the lectures that I downloaded and was looking at. And just the more I dug into it, obviously, the more just became fascinated by the mystery.
Right. And so I guess that kind of gets into part of the reason why you'd be interested, and that is with mysteries. Is that the kind of thing? I mean, is a lot of stuff that you've done in the past been more documentaries, or have they been films that are scripted?
Yeah, the main my background is mainly reality television. I'm a cameraman.
Okay.
Worked mostly in that, and I'm a fan of Kevin Pollak's podcast. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but I'm basically paraphrasing where he says, "If you're not creating, you're waiting."
Not creating, you're waiting. I like that.
Yeah. So when I came across the book and just, like I said, kept looking into it and finding out more about it and the search for the author and the different branches of where that was going, I just became interested and couldn't find anything about it, not even like a Dateline piece or some sort of History Channel piece that touched on it. So the lack of material interested me as well.
Yeah, one of the things I think about this that makes it such a mystery is that it's a microcosm of the world who may have an interest in this. It's another mystery, which I would see as something that might be just a footnote, basically, on the Detective Channel network or something, some sort of a cable channel that they would have a half-hour show about this or something. The reason I'm saying that is because as interesting and as exciting that we in the magic world might find this, I'm just wondering how much that the public would have an interest in it. Now, from the standpoint of making it as a detective novel kind of a thing or a mystery, that's where I think that the public generally would be interested. But whether the mystery is solved or not, at least they kind of learn more about it from that standpoint, but have you had an interest then also for a long time just in mysteries, and or is it just because of this one that you found it to have an interest?
Oh, no, sure. I mean, I've loved, stories like that, and it is one of the sort of endearing magical mysteries that's left, who this person was, who the author was, his background. So it just kind of sucked me in at that level. And
you know, one of the things that I have found interesting is the correlation between the interest that magicians have in magic and magicians have in Sherlock Holmes. And I think there is a good parallel that can be drawn, obviously, because that they are puzzles in a way that that are mysteries that we present, and some people see them as puzzles. They shouldn't be presented that way, but some of our volunteers or spectators may see them as puzzles. Some illusions, like that girl has to be folded up in there somehow. I mean, she hasn't vanished. I mean, they know that they're not gone or cut in half, really, or whatever. So it's like, where can they go? So then it becomes a puzzle. It becomes interesting from that standpoint. And so it's trying to figure out the puzzle. The point being, bringing back to Sherlock Holmes, is that Sherlock Holmes always tries to solve that puzzle or that mystery a little bit by using deductive reasoning and different kinds of things that he does that are very interesting. So I would think that would be something, too, as far as what your interest would be, what you're saying, as far as trying to solve the mystery of this, that you probably had some interest in Sherlock Holmes as well.
Yeah, some interest. You know, I would say I think there's definitely something to being the first one to uncover a mystery and also being in on the secret for sure.
Has there ever been like a TED Talk or something like that that's out there of someone talking about unraveling this mystery?
Not that I've known, I know of. I haven't come across any TED Talks. Like I said, just the lack of material that was out there fascinated me, you know. So really interested in not only looking and uncovering the mystery of who the author was, but really kind of trying to show a full picture of the time that it was made, you know. I'm also interested in kind of doing a recreation of the meeting between S.W. Erdnase and the author, Marshall D. Smith. Mm-hmm. You touched on Di Vernon. I think he plays a very important role in the book, its history, you know, expanding it out into the world
of magicians. That's true. He's the one that seems to have brought to the forefront, because as I understand it, that Erdnase was essentially exposing the mysteries that real card sharks used, which is why he wanted to keep his name secret, I guess.
Right. There was the Comstock laws in Chicago, too. They were at the time they were cracking down on things relating to gambling, vices. So there may have been an incentive, you know, as far as keeping himself anonymous to avoid any kind of legal trouble through that capacity. Yeah. And it's, you know, there's been the stories of chance meetings backstage with magicians, but just different threads extending out everywhere with the story, you know, with the just as far as who the author was, the legacy of the book, you know, the techniques that are still applied today with magicians. So
right. Well, that's why I was wondering also, as far as what you're finding when you talk about the different threads that are out there, is whether or not that there is any one person who kind of has all of the pieces, maybe they haven't put them all together, or when you talk with someone, that they bring a different piece to the puzzle. For an example, when you're talking then with Richard Hatch, he has a piece of it, and maybe Jamie and Swiss has another piece, or whomever that you'd be talking to and bringing into this, Jason England? Who is it?
Yeah.
Jason? Yeah. That Jason England would be brought in and he'd have another piece. So my question is, have you found that a lot of people have pieces and then you're trying to, as a documentarian, to bring these all together? Or are you kind of following each person's individual kind of line of reasoning or thoughts, or in other words, their findings? In other words, one person may say, no, it's definitely not, Andrews. It was somebody else. And this other guy said, no, I've been following this other path or whatever.
Yeah, I think definitely focusing on each one and sort of presenting it kind of in a chronological order. Mm-hmm. It's funny, you know, you can pick up the Dover edition and in the intro, it has the Martin Gardner explanation with the MF Andrews candidate, which for most of the people that I've talked to, they pretty much disregard him as a viable candidate for the author, the expert at the card table. Extending off of that, you have David Alexander, Richard Hatch, who you mentioned. I say his candidate is one who has been adopted heavily. As far as the reversal of the name, you know, SW Erdnase reversing to ES Andrews. A lot of people think the candidate is most likely to have that name. The one Richard Hatch has put forward is definitely good in that respect. But just during the course of doing the film, I've also heard of another book that has come out with a completely different candidate, you know. So it's, the book has been in publication for over 100 years. We're still putting out candidates for who this author could be, still finding out clues to this mystery.
Well, that's what seems kind of amazing, certainly, and I'm sure that's one of the reasons, as you said, that drew you into it, because it is a mystery that has been out there for a long time. But again, it seems like a small group of people who might be interested in that, who might be mystery aficionados or magicians, because it does have to do with magic and magicians, that may be kind of a smaller group. I mean, we're probably, what, 30 or 40, 50,000 even if you say 100,000 magicians in the entire world, I mean, that's still a microcosm of the population. So obviously that you're trying to present this, if I'm putting words in your mouth, tell me, that it's going to be something really more for the public. You're going to try to serve this up to make it more of a mystery solution.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still not... We might not reach a 100%, this is the person at the end of the film, but at the same time, we'll definitely be exploring the book, the history, looking at it from every angle, breaking it down, and really just sort of presenting what is out there right now.
Do you think there might be something at the end where that with each person presenting their own ideas of who that they think who the author was, that this might open up some shelf in someone's mind, or literally in a shelf, saying, hey, I got this up here that my uncle gave me a long time ago. He told me he talked with such and such, who may not have thought about this. So in other words, there might be somebody who comes out of the wall that that might help solve the mystery, but they didn't know that it was a mystery.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm hoping that as the word of this extends to a larger audience, that some sort of anecdotal evidence like that would be great. You know, that's sort of one of the other kind of interesting things about it, is that there isn't any just stories or secondhand or anyone coming forward, you know, just admitting, you know, that was my grandfather, that was my father. And like you said, maybe hopefully if it's definitely a niche audience that the story sort of appeals to, but also right. the mystery that we've kind of touched on as well, and the aspects of that I also appeal to a larger audience, and also kind of just, you know, like I said, looking at Di Vernon, looking at his work with the book, his effect on magic, and also with gambling. You know, I'm really hoping to try to speak to some people who have used these techniques, have used actual advantage play in real life situations to see if they are practical. You know, I've talked to Daniel Madison, has kind of spoke on, he's kind of touched on in the work that he's doing with the material lately about the practicality of some of the moves, like the actual sound, the flick of the cards, if it's actually possible to pull these things off at the card table.
Well, that's another thing, too. Certainly, I would think it would be difficult to try to get anyone on record, maybe off the record they might speak, as far as someone who is a professional gambler. But the people who are doing this, or maybe did do this before, were not the people who would go to Las Vegas and would play in a legitimate casino where that it's registered and handled by the government or whatever. But this would be people, I think, in the back rooms where they'd be trying to cheat somebody. It could be the dealer. It could be the people who are just people that come and go, you know, like ships in the night that just pass and go someplace else and find, and they know where all these underground games are. So are you seeking out not just magicians like the ones we've alluded to here already, but are you trying to find some of these underground guys?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to speak with people who have sort of that boots on the ground experience. You know, if it's a matter of protecting identities or anything, that's, you know, not an issue at all. But those people are definitely, I think, if there's anyone to speak to about the practicality and the, you know, the effectiveness of what's inside of the book, I think it would be someone along those lines.
Yeah, because these guys' lives literally depended on it, that the subterfuge, that if they didn't do something right, then people are going to call them out, they can shoot them, you know, they'll disappear and never be seen again or whatever. So it's not just their livelihood of trying to make money, but also of doing it correctly so that it is completely undetected. You know, there are people, obviously, Ron Connolly and other guys, you know, who are casino Dharma Ortiz and others who are casino consultants and find that. I assume you're talking with those guys?
I'm trying to, yeah. Reach out to Mr. Ortiz. I've kind of got lines out to a variety of people. But we're also, you know, approaching this crowdfunding launch. So that's – I've kind of completed this sizzle trailer, which I think you had a chance to see, right?
Yes, I did.
So that'll be attached to that as well. Really just trying to raise funds to be able to produce this properly and move forward with some of the things we have in mind.
Right. Well, I want to get to that shortly, but I tell you, maybe we should backtrack even further, because for those people who may have hung with us here for this first 10 or 15 minutes and are wondering, what is this Expert the Card Table you're talking about? What is this book about, and what's the mystery? So let's start. Now we're in the middle of this. Let's go back to the beginning to explain in your words, if you'll kind of tell people what the book is about and how this movie came about from the standpoint, the conversation that Murphy had with Erdene. So start from the beginning. What was the book and what was the conversation?
Right. So the book was published in 1902. It's written by an author listed on the cover as S.W. Erdnase, which obviously is a strange sounding name. And from the beginning, most people have assumed that the name reversed to E.S. Andrews. So a lot of people have put that idea out there, the author. But published in 1902, this S.W. Erdnase met an artist named Marshall D. Smith in Chicago, and Smith illustrated the drawings that appeared in the book, reproduced Erdnase's hands as he went through the moves, illustrating different techniques on advantage play, or basically cheating at various card games, showing moves such as the second deal, the bottom deal, various passes, techniques and moves that, when applied during a card game, are going to give that player a significant advantage. So the book was put out and didn't really do anything. The copyright sort of passed on from the author. The book went into public domain. And aside from some anecdotal stories, and, you know, what we have from that meeting and the Gardner-Smith correspondence, when Martin Gardner sort of undertook the task of trying to figure out who wrote this book, looked up Marshall Smith, and via correspondence with him, sort of was able to get some information about who this person was, details. And since then, the book sort of really passed through the hands, I would think, magicians mostly, where it kind of reached Di Vernon, who really sort of adopted it, from what I understand, as one of the, you know, bases of the work that he was doing in magic at the time. And through what he was able to do in New York and beyond, you know, really was able to pass the book down to younger magicians in a different generation and sort of really shine the light on the material that was in there, at least for a magician's perspective, to use.
Right, because for a long time, again, Di Vernon was the one that a lot of people would say would be the father of close-up. Of course, we argued Ed Marlowe or whomever else, but he certainly contributed a lot to the art of close-up and bringing it to the forefront. And so by doing that, he has put himself in that position where he became known as a professor because of how he was teaching other people. But that was largely inspired by that book of Expert at the Card Table. And then he had written copious notes into the margins of all that, and that later sold as another separate kind of book with his notes and everything. But obviously that when you're performing magic, that things should be done in such a subtle manner that it's undetectable, and also because it's natural. And I believe that, you know, you have to say obviously that Divernon was heavily, heavily influenced by this book that allowed him then to create other kinds of ideas that were very natural, having to do with playing cards and everything, and the way that you would hold them and handle them and for the seconds and all the rest of the diagonal palm shift and whatever else that's, being taught in there. So there are things that certainly from that book had influenced Vernon, which still influences us today. So I can understand why people are interested in trying to find out the author and more about that. Now, I mentioned earlier, I'm sorry, I said Murphy. I meant to say Marshall Smith. Now, as I recall, I think, didn't they only meet once, and it was like in a hotel room or something? It seems like it was a shady story surrounding that meeting, too, and only one time when he was talking about drawing the photos or the drawings.
Right, yeah, and I think that's really sort of one of the really key interesting moments in the story, because that's the one real true meeting between the author and, you know, a person, and in this case the artist. But from what I understand, they met in a Chicago hotel room. It was cold. It was a very sparse room. When Smith arrived, Erdnase sort of warmed up his hands and produced a sort of 2-foot by 2-foot board, which he used to sort of display the moves and hold up pictures that he displayed. And from what I understand, did a couple card tricks to sort of loosen up his hands.
Yeah.
And from there, they pretty much got down to the task at hand of just reproducing these drawings of Erdnase's hands very specifically as he went through and demonstrated the various moves and techniques.
I wonder
that he was going to be writing about in the book.
Was he actually photographing that, or was that something that photography advanced enough such that he could take photos and then go back and redraw that, or was he just kind of drawing them on the fly and then perfecting them later, or do you have any idea?
No, yeah. From what I understand, it was just drawing, just straight illustration.
Mm-hmm. Because there are several illustrations. When I stop and think about doing those, certainly that couldn't have been done just within a couple of hours. I would think that would take over some period of time.
Right. So, yeah, he did spend some significant time with him. His description is, you know, fairly generic. I think it's something like 5'6", you know, middle-aged. Soft hands, I think he said specifically, and fair hair, fair skin. I think he anecdotally mentioned something about a connection to Louis Dalrymple, who was like a political cartoonist during the time. And so some of the research that has extended for some of the candidates, that's been sort of a key piece of information that's been used there. But yeah, they only met once. He cut him a check, a low number check from a local Chicago bank. And it was really just, I think Smith really just sort of saw it as a work for hire. When Gardner contacted him, you know, I don't think anyone had even asked him about it, probably since he had done the job.
It was just another job for him, obviously. You know, I would think that when you say like a low number check, that just kind of would say to me that obviously he just kind of blew into town, and he probably just
right.
The cash that he had won from some game, and he opened up an account, and rather than paying in cash, I doubt he was filing taxes. On the other hand, when you say soft hands, I've heard that before as well. It could be because of his build and of his look, where that he, you know, doesn't sound like he was tanned or leathery or anything. It looks like he might have had the hands of a surgeon or something, so he could have been in the medical profession for all we know, you know?
Yeah, the railroad has come up too, possibly, some connection to him working on the railroad or traveling a lot via railroad, where he would potentially get into these sort of quick and easy, fast card games, you know, cash flying around, you know, chances to really, you know, if you can hustle and, you know, with a guy – I mean, someone who could do all the techniques that are displayed in this book would be it's not really someone I'd want to sit down with and play cards with. You know?
I'd rather play with them than against them, obviously. Yeah, but I agree. I understand from the railroad standpoint back at that age when you could blow in and out of town and find a game fairly easily in some of these little honky-tonks and places, but you couldn't stay too long, I wouldn't think, because the people started to get kind of wise, like, well, this guy won last night, too, or the night before that, and we're starting to wonder what he's actually doing. So, I could certainly understand that if he's going from coast to coast and was with the railroad or something, because that would point away from someone who would be in the medical profession who actually has a job that would be in one place. So it would have to be someone who would be traveling. It make more sense, certainly. But I was going to say, as far as the low number on the check, you know, of trying to follow through on that and say, well, what were the other numbers and what was the bank? And does the bank have any records of that person and other kinds of checks that they had written for other kinds of things and kind of follow the trail of the money, if you will?
Yeah, that's definitely been pursued by people who, you know, are much smarter and have gone way to detail on that. And that's definitely something that we'll be looking at during the course of sort of examining all the different theories on who this guy was. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, we mentioned a few people who are on the trailer that you've already got and some other people that you're speaking to as well. And I believe that you had said you've worked on this probably about 18 months or so as well, and you've got a lot more to do.
Yeah, give or take about 2 years off and on, just kind of spitballing it together and just kind of getting in touch with people. And during the course of my research, just reaching out to everyone who sort of has a connection to this story and to the book. I'm actually kind of curious, do you have a relationship with the book at all? Do you use it at all in any of the techniques that you do?
I have, worked on and done, diagonal palm shift and a few of the other things, strike doubles. And I haven't done, a lot of it. I've read through it. I've got two or three copies of it. I do have the Vernon book that was called Revelations.
Right.
Yeah, I've got one of the original ones with his signature he'd signed to me and everything in there.
Is it the first edition or the second edition?
First edition.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Great. Yeah. I spoke with Mike Caveney actually the other day. I haven't been able to put any of that into the sizzle trailer that you saw, but he actually was the publisher of Revelation. So it was really interesting to talk to him and the story that went into getting that out into the world, and especially with the pictures and just Di Vernon's notes and work relating to
right.
the book. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, with his picture that's tipped into it. I mean, it's a beautiful book, and I handle
Absolutely.
It carefully whenever I open it and do the thing, it is very cool. And I could imagine that the story would be very interesting about how that he had gone about and worked with Vernon as far as trying to get this photograph. And it's a different format of book, if you will. It's not the regular size. It's kind of long, so this way that it has room
right.
over the margins and everything. So, yeah, that's a beautiful book, certainly. And so in doing this, working on, you say, on and off for about 2 years, and being the filmmaker, are you also the producer and director? I mean, you kind of the chief cook and bottle washer for everything, or have you got like a crew that's working with you? Or
I have some, luckily, since I do, work in this field, I have some really talented friends and some people who have been helping me out with editing and with getting my hands on some equipment and stuff. So I've just been really, it's sort of, a passion project, something that I've been just chipping away at in my spare time. And I'm just excited to get close to kind of putting this out there and seeing what kind of reaction it gets and just trying to get to as many people as possible. And through that also, I'm also trying to hopefully get my hands on some footage from the 1999 Los Angeles Convention of Magic when Richard Hatch and David Alexander presented.
Right.
Hopefully pulling on some threads with, just the more people know about it, maybe something will get uncovered. That would be, I think some people don't really want the mystery to be solved. I think that the allure of the book, that is a big part of it.
Sure.
We'll see what happens. Basically, it's going to be interesting to see as it reaches a wider audience, hopefully, what is out there.
Yeah. I was thinking about that, conference in magic in 99 as well when Richard Hatch had spoken, and that was what I was kind of alluding to as well. That so that, as far as your knowledge, it was not recorded?
I've reached out to a couple people who I think might, you know, if it was recorded, you know, just on a camcorder in the back, they'd be the people to talk to. But, yeah, and Richard Hatch also has been super helpful and is, you know, a depth of knowledge when it comes to this Erdnase material.
Right.
Because there's just so many different avenues and just different little threads that extend all over the place, you know.
Right, right. I always think of Dick as being one of the foremost authorities. I mean, whenever that I think about the book now or Erdnase, that he's the – of course, Dick and I have been good friends since, I don't know, early 1980s. Mm. We worked together – when he lived here in Houston, we worked at the Magic Island together and worked a lot of other corporate events together on many, many occasions. And so maintain our friendship. You know, just a great guy. But beyond that, I always think of him as being really the professor from the standpoint of he's so well read. Of course, owned H&R Magic Books and has read probably all the books that they ever sold. You know, if you had a question or whatever, that he was always the guy. Plus, it was kind of when he was a magic dealer of, you know, he would call me up and say, Scotty, this is a book for you. I know what kind of stuff you like and what you do, and I think this is for you. So sight unseen, I mean, I'd say, that sounds fine. You know, I'll take one, you know. So he always knew his customers quite well also. Just a brilliant man who I respect. So you got
a good
person there.
Yeah, for the most part, everyone's been really helpful. You know, we've spoke with David Benn, Jason England, who you've mentioned. I shot with Brent Jarris here, who owns the Magic Apple.
Right.
We had Mike Pichotta, who I think you had on your podcast,
right.
who was
the Castle,
Close-Up Magician
right.
of the Year. Yeah, great to talk to him. Paul Wilson, I spoke to Mike Caveney. And, you know, hoping to extend, I'd love to talk to Ricky Jay about this. Absolutely. You know, someone who I think would have a great perspective on the book. Hopefully Bill Kalush. So, yeah, I mean, really just trying to get a lot of different perspectives and really kind of just present to just the story of this book and everything around it to a larger, you know, kind of general audience.
Yeah, I think two of the guys that you mentioned right there in particular, I would put on that bucket list and probably not even release the film until I got both of them. And one is Ricky Jay, whose poster I'm looking at right now. I'm sitting there recording this podcast underneath a poster of Houdini on one side and Ricky Jay on the other. And the other one is Bill Kalush, of course, that Bill, with his vast knowledge and his Ask Alexander of all the information he's done, plus other things they put out under their name. There at the Magic the Conjurers Center. I would say, yeah, those two guys would have a lot to contribute, certainly, towards this then as well. So chronologically, again, you're going to be starting off and saying, okay, here's kind of what we know. Here's when the book came out, and there's a conversation, and then here these guys, you know, talk about this and trying to put this together and ultimately kind of bringing it up and to the point saying, okay, well, here are different theories, and then just kind of leaving it up to the viewer to determine which theory they want to follow, or perhaps if something comes in later, I guess, that you would amend this maybe to put something maybe before the credits to say, well, since this movie was released, that we found such and such.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things where it's kind of evolving as it's moving along. You know, the more that I'm doing research, the more that I'm looking into it, the more, you know, we're finding out and the more we're hopefully uncovering. And really, just like you said, kind of trying to provide, you know, just a fair, balanced perspective on what's out there, what we know, and, you know, at the same time, just kind of letting the viewers sort of draw their own conclusions.
And then after it gets cut, I guess it's going to be a while before you find a distribution company and everyone to handle this.
Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of interesting just how much, you know, that whole, just everything with distribution and getting media out there is kind of changing, you know, like with Netflix and the streaming services. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I was a fan of Our Magic. So it was great to talk to Paul Wilson kind of about how they went about making that film. So, yeah, I mean, I think it'll find its audience, I'm hoping. And, really just through the course of the next, couple weeks of kind of getting the word out there and just, you know, just spreading the story of Erdenes, hoping to get some attention.
Right. And in doing that, now it kind of comes to the point you were talking earlier about crowdfunding and having a program or a campaign that gets started. And I know there are different ones to use, of GoFundMe or Kickstarter and whatever. And so you're going to try to raise some money, I guess, through which program or campaign?
Looking at Indiegogo, and really been kind of working on getting some perks lined up that I think people are going to be interested and want to get their hands on, especially people who are sort of interested in the material specifically that the book deals with. Speaking with Jordan Murphy from JM Authentics about making some really cool stuff, some close-up pads, and possibly trying to work to reproduce the board I mentioned that Erdenes produced when he was meeting with Marshall Smith for that recreation scene. Spoken with Daniel Madison about some perk stuff. I have some things, some signed items from the people that we've mentioned that have been in the sizzle trailer that'll be attached to the campaign. Jason England, David Benn, Richard Hatch, Paul Wilson. Got a hardcover copy of the book that's been signed. A lot of, you know, little cool things that I think will kind of incentivize people to kind of pitch in and help us spread the word and get this story out there.
Right. Now, the Indiegogo, does that differ from the others because that has to do with independent films, people trying to raise money for that, or is that just another crowdfunding program?
Yeah, it's one of the – there's Kickstarter, which is sort of an all or nothing, which Indiegogo also has, but they also, Indiegogo also has a program where you can keep what you earn and they take a percentage. I think you mentioned GoFundMe, which is also another avenue. So yeah, I just kind of try to wade out into the waters and kind of dip my toe.
Sure.
And kind of see what's out there.
I don't have any recommendation as to which one to use or not. It's typically when I think of a GoFundMe, that has to do usually with someone that is trying to raise funds for some health issue that they had or whatever, whereas a Kickstarter is something that if they have a physical product that they're trying to get out into the market and just need the funds in order to make the things, you know, then they do that. And, I think of Indiegogo as, again, being kind of like for independent filmmakers to try to help fund their programs. So. But
yeah.
I'm sure they have other kinds of things that they do with that as well. So have you thought about also of having what the ultimate would be? Because a lot of times on these crowdfunding things that there's, you know, if you give, you know, $50,000 or whatever, X number of dollars that, you know, we'll fly you out here and you get to have dinner or you get to meet Erdenes or I don't know. You should go to the gravesite.
Right. Yeah. I mean, definitely. I mean, I'm, you know, willing to extend producer credit to anyone who is interested in you know, helping out in that capacity. And we've also kind of nothing, you know, tentatively scheduled as far as a screening. But I'm sure, you know, we will have some sort of VIP, you know, early screening with, you know, a lot of great guests that we're going to be more than happy to bring some donors out to as well. So,
sure. There was a similar thing that Richard Turner had done with his movie Delt. And in fact, they just had the screening of that up in Austin about 2 weeks ago or so. And I had an opportunity to go, but I had a conflict performing and I couldn't get up there for the evening that it was on. But I haven't talked with anybody. I was curious. I don't remember if what crowdfunding website that he had used, but it was successful enough, obviously, that he was able to put this together. Now, I know in making a film that it's not an inexpensive thing, certainly, even if you're on a shoestring budget. From what I understand, a shoestring budget to one person is a fortune to somebody else, you know. So when you're looking at this, what are your goals and stretch goals or what do you want to get and hope to get?
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely being someone who works in this industry, I'm going to really want to focus on paying the people who are on my crew and that factors into it. We're going to have some travel expenses. Obviously shooting, a recreation of that meeting between Marshall Smith and Erdenes, is going to require, some work. So, yeah, I'm as far as budgeting goes, I'm trying to, you know, really kind of play that numbers game of presenting a number that is a goal that we can reach, but is also going to be something where ideally I'm not going to have to crowdfund again. You know, I'd like to be able to get it all in one go. So as we're nearing closer, I'm definitely trying to hone in on what that number is going to be. So
okay, yeah, you're still trying to fine tune this. I won't press you anything on that.
No worries.
Once that you do get that, do you have some sort of an idea in mind? And again, going back to what Marcy Hume was telling me about in their documentary Magicians, it took 4 years of filming and about 18 months of getting it cut, and then about another, I don't know how long, you know, get it distributed. So from the time that you have it funded, let's say that you reach full funding or exceed that, and hopefully so, that you expect to have it done within what, a year, 6 months, 5 years? I mean, what's the realistic schedule?
I think a year is kind of the number that I have in my head. I'd love to be able to turn around the crowdfunding perks as quickly as possible. That's something that I've kind of been told from people I've talked to who've gone this route. That, and I would feel the same way, you know, if I donate to something like this, especially people who are going to donate to this film are really interested in this material, and I really want to make sure that they're able to get their hands on these things that they were making, because I think they're going to be really special, and it's going to be geared towards people who really like this material, like I said, and who love the book and are really interested in finding out more about it and also perfecting their technique when it comes to what's inside of there, you know.
Boy, you know, you're exactly right. As far as a lot of the crowdfunding things, that when you buy something, you expect to get it. I mean, we live in a society now of instant gratification, obviously, not just on television, but digitally on the internet. We know the internet's just not fast enough. We want information fast. We want to have Amazon delivered by drone today and whatever that we get. Right. So I'm sure it's the same thing whenever the people are going to want to get their perk back after they paid for this, and the longer that it goes out, then they begin to wonder, really, did I make a right investment with this or not? I've heard that a couple of times with some people who have done these kinds of things, which they have helped to fund some things, and felt like that, well, you know, I got it, or it wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to be, or it took too long, or they never did it, which, you know, a quick Kickstarter, again, if they don't get fully funded, then nothing happens, you know. So it depends upon which one of those crowdfunding things. So it sounds like by using the Indiegogo that you'll be able to do that and, yeah, get this turned around. And let me just tell you as well, or caution you, I guess, to make sure that you keep in communication with all those people who have been doing the funding.
Absolutely.
To let them know what's going to be happening, because that's in part what I've heard before, that some people have said, well, I donated 2 years ago and I have no idea if they're even still in business or if they just took my money and went to Cuba or somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so. I'd definitely encourage people to check us out on Twitter and Facebook. We're at the Expert Doc. And I think that's really going to be one of the other great things is, you know, if we hook one of these big fishes potentially for an interview, it's going to be really great to share that with the audience and, you know, really take some communal enjoyment in really talking to people in depth about this material. You know, like Ricky Jay's documentary, they kind of touch on the book. David Benn kind of worked on a documentary or, you know, did a documentary about Divergent and where they touch on the book. Right. But really to hold up the magnifying glass and really kind of just focus on the book and all, you know, obviously we've talked about this, the mystery ad nauseum, but just all the little, everything that sort of folds into it from the magician, from the gambling perspective, the history of it, Di Vernon, you know, and then also where it's going now with the stuff that's, you know, I'm seeing on Instagram and on social media and where people are taking it. Even today with, you know, the stuff coming out from Illusionist and Dan and Dave and stuff, it's, you know, it's exciting to see, you know, just all the different facets of this material can kind of be presented, you know what I mean?
Right, right. You know, it's kind of funny that I have a T-shirt, I think it came from Dan and Dave, that I got at Magic Live a couple of years ago that says Erdnase University on it. Or maybe I got that from Brent Jarris.
I think he's wearing one in the actually in the interview that we shot with him.
I have had so many people saying, where's Erdnase University? They just kind of cock their head and look at me, and then I have to explain.
What year was it that you were at Magic Live?
I've been to most all of them. I've only missed two, but I think I bought this. I may have purchased this last year.
Oh, that's funny, because I the chunk of the interviews I actually shot when I was there. It's the Orleans, right? That's the hotel
correct.
That they have.
Yes.
That. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So we might have even passed like ships in the night through the casino, possibly. I wasn't able to make it to the show, but we shot a couple of the interviews actually in the hotel there because I was able to wrangle down a couple of the people who, you know, were going to be there. So.
Well, it looked like you were in a library or something with the background that you had in the shots.
Yeah, for a couple of them, one of them was, at Jason Englund's, library where, you know, he has a really great collection of some first editions on top of, you know, a variety of different, magical books. And it's actually funny, you know, some of the interviews that I was doing, you were speaking about, or we were talking about card sharks and actual, you know, card cheats and.
Right.
For some of the interviews, there were, you know, people hanging around. And later on, I asked one of the interview subjects, you know, who are those guys that were kind of hanging out while we were shooting? And he'd list off two of the names, and he'd be like, the other two, I can't tell you who they were. So it's kind of like, okay.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah. No, Magic Live is a great convention, and it seems like everybody's there. And I'm going, yeah, this is going to be – it's sold out again this year. It sold out fairly quickly. You get about 1,600 people. Stan's doing has always done a great job with that, so I'm looking forward to seeing that again this year. So anyhow, it sounds like that you're on the right track and things are moving along certainly. And so you mentioned a couple of the things you said, like on Instagram and on Facebook or Twitter. What were the handles, or how can people reach you?
Yeah, we're at the Expert Doc. We're on Twitter and Facebook right now. We'll be posting updates on there as things move forward, and we'll have links to the Indiegogo and you know, the crowdfunding posted on there. We'll have a website going live as well soon. Tossing around starting an Instagram as well as we move forward. So we'll definitely be you know, trying to spread out. And if people want material, we're going to be more than happy to get it out there to them, you know.
Okay. And that was called that's the Expert Doc, T-H-E, Expert D-O-C, Doc.
Correct.
Got it. Okay. Now, if somebody in the meantime can't wait and they want to contact you directly saying, hey, you know, my uncle has a story and I want
sure.
to contact you and tell you, know, how can they get in touch with you?
You can email us at theexpertdoc@gmail.com. If you have any sort of anecdotal evidence at all related to the story or anything that you think might be of use for the documentary, I'd be more than happy to hear about it. You know, by all means, please reach out to us if you think that you have something that might, you know, lend more evidence or turn over some stones that we haven't yet.
Great. And as far as the Indiegogo, right now as we're recording this, I'm not certain when this is going to be released. I assume that they can, since it's not live right now and you don't have a direct link to send them to, I assume that they can go to Indiegogo.com. That's I-N-D-I-E, gogo.com, and then just do the search bar for The Expert.
Yeah, when the campaign goes live, it'll be Indiegogo.com/TheExpertDoc. You should be able to find us there, and we'll post, you know, like I said, the Twitter, the Facebook. We'll definitely be trying to blast it out there, hopefully reaching as many people as possible. And, yeah, hopefully making a film that I think the magic community will enjoy, you know.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like I think when's all said and done that everyone has a little bit a different idea or a theory of where that it came from or where it's going to be going or whatever. I think that, and as you said earlier, that it could be that people really may not want this mystery to be solved. And I think from what I have seen and heard others like Dick Hatch and others talk about and kind of what you said here, that nothing has been certainly solved, you know, yet at this point, you know, that you'd like to think at the end that it's all going to be wrapped up neatly. For an example, as an aside, I just finished listening to this series on Finding Richard Simmons, a podcast, and it was kind of
yeah. I've heard about that.
Yeah, and they just released the last one just this week, and so they do tend to wrap this up, and so at least that kind of had a conclusion. And in this one, I'm just saying it sounds like that the mystery still may remain. It's just that we'll have more pieces of the information. And there are a lot of really interesting stories. I think this is going to be a very fascinating documentary.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I appreciate, the outlet here on the podcast, and really hoping that your listeners are going to like this film and check out what we have to offer.
Yes, sounds great. Well, great, Jim. I appreciate it a lot. And again, for those who are listening to this, if you didn't catch all of those links, just go to the website that we've got for this blog. That is themagicwordpodcast.com. And you can look for this blog that will have links to the Indiegogo account and other information. And I can, at that point, I guess, post a copy of that trailer on there, too, so people can watch just a three-minute segment, which is pretty fascinating. It was very well done. And golly, I mean, you are a very good filmmaker from the standpoint that it was beautifully filmed and edited.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, and we're might even have a slightly different trailer from the one that I sent you, hopefully getting some new footage that we shot recently in there. So, and I apologize if I stumble out of the gates a little bit. I've been working on Bachelorette, and we've been doing nights, so I'm going on very little sleep. So it took a minute for my brain to kick in there a little bit, but I think it worked out in the end.
Well, the Bachelorette's about ready to wrap up their season, I think, too, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just train keeps on rolling.
And it's a good thing for you because this is, what, like the 17th season or something? It's been on for a long time, longer than that maybe.
Yeah, I think we're on they're on the 13th season of the Bachelorette now. So
fascinating. Well, great. Well, thank you very much, Jim. I appreciate your time. And again, just I want everybody to go and check that out. And if you have the financial means to do so, please support it. I think you'll be happy. And even though Jim hasn't been specific as to the perks because you haven't got them all nailed down, I'm sure there'll be some wonderful things. And as you mentioned, including getting tickets to the premiere to go and see that, which I assume would probably be out in L.A.
I'd love to maybe potentially do something with the Magic Castle, and also, we'll be doing, as far as the perks go, I'm definitely looking at decks. That'll be something, we'll be getting into some softback and hardback close-up pads, some signed items, like I mentioned. A lot of things that I think people will be interested in and will kind of whet their appetite as far as when it comes to donating. So
cool. Sounds very good. Well, Jim, thanks again very much for being my guest. And, the name of my podcast is, of course, called The Magic Word, and I might as well ask you, what is your magic word or phrase?
Oh, I would say have a good time all the time.
Cheers to that. I like that.
Thanks a lot, Scott. I appreciate it.
Okay, you bet. And so for The Magic Word Podcast, that was Jim Davey, the filmmaker for Expert, The Expert. This is Scotty out.
Well, I thought I would do just an update with Jim Davey now that the podcast had been recorded some months ago prior to the event of the campaign being launched on Indiegogo. And now that it is, I thought we would get back in touch with Jim to see what kinds of things that have been put on the campaign that are available. So let me welcome back. And now we're calling back. Hello, Jim. Good afternoon.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me back on and giving me a chance to update everybody on what's been happening. And obviously, thoughts and prayers go out to everyone in Houston, yourself included, involved in what's been going on with Harvey here recently.
Yeah, thank you very much. For those who are listening, most everyone knows that I live in Houston because I mention that so often. But for those who are new listeners or have forgotten that I am in Houston, and I want to thank everyone for your thoughts, your calls, your prayers, and everything that thankfully that I have had. My house is dry. The streets haven't flooded. I just live a couple of blocks from a major bayou, which was flooded but didn't overflow its banks into the streets and flood us out. And I'm just 2 miles from downtown also. So we are within what's called a loop, I guess. And so we have been thankfully dry. And so I appreciate it. But yeah, timing as far as releasing this campaign on Indiegogo versus the different funds that are being put towards the Red Cross and all Salvation Army and different organizations to try to help those who have been displaced by this catastrophic and apocalyptic type of flooding we've had. Again, the timing is kind of difficult of saying, well, you know, should we donate over here to try to get this documentary going and up off the ground, or, you know, some money towards, you know, blankets and food and water, you know, for people who are needing it in the most urgent manner right now. So, yeah, it's kind of difficult. I know that this will pass. It'll take years before that we get back to any real to normal of whatever that was. But, you know, as to the documentary, I know that that's something that has some urgency also, because that you have got a lot of stuff already filmed and some more stuff that you plan to do. And this is going to be kind of an ongoing project as far as doing the documentary. How long do you think it was going to take you? I don't remember if we discussed that earlier in the podcast, but did you say about how long you think it's going to take, a year or so to film this?
Yeah, I mean, ideally with the funds raised from the campaign, we're going to try to do some interviews and secure licensing and rights to archival footage that we can use of various people using techniques and stuff that's displayed from the book, voiceover music, all the kinds of stuff that'll go into production. So.
Right. Now, going to the campaign that's going on right now, I know you had some ideas earlier as to what you were hoping to get. So what's been added to it? What are some of the perks that people can get at different levels?
Well, for $15, people will have access to a digital download and copy of the film. $25, we're doing a deck with a copy of the film as well, and on-screen credit. Your name will be showed in the end credits of the film. And we're trying to do a deck through a company called Carta Mundi, with a unique back that I've had a graphic designer work on that's pretty interesting. And by the way, I think I should mention too, I don't think the last time we spoke that I had the Instagram up either. So I would definitely tell people to head over there and check it out. That's at the expert doc, all one word. We're on Twitter as well. But I think since the last time that we spoke on the podcast, I've put up a lot of little clips and photos and stuff that kind of give an idea of some of the materials that we'd be trying to use in the finished documentary as well. From the $25 level, we've got the $50 level, which we're going to produce a DVD with some special features on it. I think I'm definitely going to include full edited interviews with the various people that I've spoken with outside of whatever clips end up inside of the finished film. And at that $50 level, you get the DVD, digital copy, and you'll get credit deck as well. Everything from the $25 level will include a deck. For $100, I've got four aces from a B Smithback deck signed by Richard Hatch and Jason England. They both appear in the trailer that's attached to the campaign that you can see on the Indiegogo. And then obviously, there's other perks attached to that. You get copies of the film with all of these higher tiers. For $200, we have this really great leather clip from a company called RE Handcrafted that is in the style of a first edition copy of The Expert at the Card Table. It's this really great green leather embossed with the logo and the writing from the cover of the book. Also for $200, there's a beautiful 7x12 hard pad from a company called Jim Authentics. It's got a similar green style topping with the Expert at the Card Table logo embossed into it with a hard leather back. I did have a hardcover edition of the book, but that did sell. That was signed by various people who have contributed and appeared in the trailer. Also for $200, I've got David Benn's recent book on The Expert at the Card Table called The Experts at the Card Table, which is a signed copy that also includes a signed Joker from David as well from that Smithback deck. And then for $400, you can get clip and the hardback pad that I mentioned together, what we're calling like an expert package. Slightly smaller hard pad. It's a 12 by 8.5, but you get that and the clip. a lot of kind of Erdnase paraphernalia to add to a collection. And also, too, I think by the time this airs, I'll be posting. I was contacted by Chris Dixon on Instagram. He goes by at Erdnase1902, and it sounds like he's going to be donating a sort of a aged copy, first edition copy of The Expert at the Card Table. It looks and feels and has kind of that the look of a vintage original hardcover copy that we'll also be posting up on there as well. So got a little interesting perks geared towards people who are kind of interested in this topic or looking to get into it.
That's pretty cool. And I know that there are some higher levels also for director's cut and other kinds of things that are further on down.
Yeah.
I would encourage people to go and take a look at that, at the campaign to see what it is that whatever you can financially help out in making this documentary become real, you know, please do. And the website, now that that is available, what is the URL?
Well, really, I would gear people towards the Instagram or the Twitter, which is at the Expert Doc. We have a ton of links on there. We're also through the Indiegogo page. If you search the Expert documentary, you should be able to find it on there too. Pretty easy. But like I said, the Twitter and the Instagram, the link is, you know, splashed all over there. People should have a pretty easy time following it. And definitely please go on there and at the very least just watch the trailer and, you know, get a feel for what we're trying to do. And if you like what you see, you know, obviously, please right now, if you have any extra funds, give it to the Red Cross or anyone who can help in Houston. But we'll be running for just started last weekend, so we've got close to a little less than a month to go here. So we'll be running into late September. So plenty of time to check it out. And, you know, like I said, hopefully make a donation and help
off the ground. As you said, it's going to be running for about 30 days. And so that's going to be taking it sometime into September the week of the 20th or somewhere in there, I believe, before that goes off. So I do have also a copy of that video that is on your page that is on my blog then as well. So those are going to themagicwordpodcast.com and clicking on the links that will take you to this Indiegogo campaign and give you other information and whatnot that you can view the video there. But then again, when you click through that, you can get to that campaign for a lot more details, certainly on this. It's a worthwhile project. And in fact, at the Magic Live convention in Las Vegas recently, that Jason England and Richard Hatch had given him quite a scholarly talk about this very issue in the focus session one afternoon. And I think they had repeated it a couple of times, and it was very well received, and it was standing room only. So I know there's a lot of interest that people have in this subject, certainly. And if you want to assist in trying to make this documentary a reality, please do. Please go to the campaign and donate what you can and receive some pretty cool perks also. So thanks a lot, Jim, for putting this out there and for continuing to try to, to help us solve this mystery.
Yeah, thank you so much for the exposure and the help. You know, I much appreciated.
Sure,
you so
you're
much.
Welcome. And so, again, I encourage everybody to go over there and take a look. And so that was just a quick update on where we stand then right now since our previous conversation that you had heard on the first part of this podcast. So, again, I'll say that was Jim Davey, and this is Scotty Out.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate you being on the program here today and for telling us a lot about what's going on with the project. And I know it's pretty far down the road before this happens. And I also know that we're kind of in the midst of, this hurricane season and a lot of people who are giving donations to other kinds of worthwhile projects. And so as the Spirit moves you, whatever that you wish and whatever that you can help support, I know that he would really appreciate that. And it's one of those things where I put my money where my mouth is as well. So I'm a financial supporter of the project and had put some money towards that as well, because I think this is something that would be very interesting, not only for us, but also for the general public. It's a general mystery that, or actually a specific mystery, I think, that do we want to see it solved or not? You know, that's kind of a question there as well. It could be that it might be better that we actually don't know, kind of to keep a have a secret even magicians don't even know about. But we'll see what happens. So again, as you can, please help support the project. And it is kind of a long URL, but it is at Indiegogo, which is, again, IndieGogo.com. But it's then /project/the-expert-documentary-magic-cards, and then a pound sign slash. Anyhow, if you go to Indiegogo, do a search for The Expert, you'll find it. And again, they could certainly use your help and support. And speaking of help and support, I also want to thank again the GreatAmericanMagicCompany.com, purveyors of fine magic, for being a sponsor here on The Magic Word. And it's because of Eric and also the Friends of The Magic Words that actually provide us with some financial support that we're able to continue to keep this podcast going. And speaking of which, we have a lot of really great chats that are going to be coming up in future weeks. Over this past summer, I've had an opportunity to sit with several people where I've been at conventions or out in LA or in my travels where I've had an opportunity to speak with some people, and some via Skype from pretty far distances. So I think you'll be surprised at some of the conversations we're going to be having coming up in future weeks. I'm excited to kind of start releasing these things incrementally as we go. So it will be just a lot of fun. So again, I appreciate Jim Davey being my guest, and I thank the GreatAmericanMagicCompany.com for being a sponsor, as well as the Friends of the Magic Word. And until next week, stay well, get booked, and have a good time all the time. Thank you, Jim, for that one. This is Scotty out.